How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Figure Four Daily. It is November 28, 2013, here at figure4online.com/wrestlingobserver.com. Yes, in fact, today is Thanksgiving. So I want to wish everybody in the United States a very happy Thanksgiving. And for those of you around the world, hope you had a great day as well. Lance is going to be on the show anytime now. He's not celebrating Thanksgiving, but he is having dinner. And in fact, is probably watching Impact as we speak. So when we get him here on the air, we'll probably talk a little bit about the Halloween edition of Impact. I'm sure there was a food fight. I'm going to be watching the show later on tonight with Vinny, who is on his way over, in fact. And we'll be up later on tonight with the return of Granny. And we'll be reading some notes from her Facebook page, what you are thankful about, and reviewing Impact, and coming up with an idea for a new contest as well. So that's coming up here in a bit. Just a quick reminder, tomorrow at 11 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 2 a.m. Eastern, it is the return of After Dark Radio, this time for the first time ever, streaming live at artbell.com. If you head up to artbell.com right now and scroll down the front page, there is a big graphic right there. It says Dark Matter Radio Network Launch Player. And if you click that button, boom! It takes you to darkmatterradio.net, where the show will just start streaming live. Don't have to even hit any buttons when you go to that page. It'll just start playing over your computer. And obviously, if you've got a smartphone and an audio hookup in your car, you'll be able to listen to it streaming in your vehicle as well. Pretty much wherever you can listen to internet radio, you will be able to listen to the Dark Matter Radio Network and After Dark Radio live on Friday night. So once again, that is Friday night, 11 Pacific, 2 Eastern. It's going to be a two-hour show. It will be live. We'll be taking your phone calls during the program. You can listen in and no longer have to go to my Twitter to find out when to call After Dark. Just listen to the show, and at some point I will say, phone lines open, and just start calling. I have made a couple of small changes to the phone system. Instead of having a toll-free number and a non-toll-free number and a Skype line and everything else, I have consolidated everything down to one phone number, and it is the toll-free number. If you want to join into After Dark Radio, if you want to join in on Wrestling Observer Live on Sports Byline and Sirius Satellite Radio this coming Sunday, and of course the Monday call-in show as well at the website, WrestlingObserver.com, if you want to call into any of these shows, the number will remain 855-478-4478. It is a toll-free number, free, 855-478-4478. That is the number for every single one of these shows. And it patches into several phone lines, actually. So if you dial that number, hopefully it will ring. If it does not ring, or if it rings and nobody answers, just keep trying again. And as soon as I pick up, you will be live on the air. So the phone number, once again, 855-478-4478. We'll talk a little bit more about this on the Brian and Vinny Show tonight. But enough time wasting here. Let's head to the interview with Lance Storm, see what he's thinking of Impact, whatever else is on his mind. You're listening to Figure Four Daily at WrestlingObserver.com. All right, we are back here on the show, everybody. We have Lance here on the line, and this is, of course, a pre-taped show. So when I called Lance, it was 9:30 Eastern, and he was in the middle of watching Impact, and he has alerted me that I've saved him. Is that correct, Lance?
Yes, and actually saved my wife too, because she was not thrilled for having to watch the festivities. The first half hour we got a tremendous Dixie Carter promo with the theme of winner winner chicken dinner, which is apparently a family tradition in the companies that her family owns, that they take all the people that work for them and they split them in half, which my wife thought was really mean. They're going to fight, and the winners get to join in a turkey feast. Although the best part is, behind her is a buffet table with one silver tray with, you know, the cover.
Yeah.
And her new right-hand man, sergeant-at-arms, whoever the heck her... I don't remember what she called her new assistant, lifts up the thing, and there's this really bland, awful-looking small turkey just sitting there all by itself under this silver platter that I suppose everyone who wins on Impact over the next 2 hours will get to sit down and have a piece of this really crappy-looking dried-out bird.
This sounds awesome.
Yes. I guess it's to make up for those who worked for Impact to qualify for food stamps. They're now just paying them in food.
Hey, works for me.
Oh, so it was tremendous.
It's winner, winner, chicken dinner.
Yes. Well, I think she said turkey dinner, but the old expression
turkey
was,
dinner.
And she may have screwed it up. I don't know, because the expression is winner, winner, chicken dinner, which was actually an expression used on, I know, Dancing with the Stars a while back. Was an expression that the one football player used and became like the catchphrase of the whole season. So maybe I heard it wrong, thinking that that's what he always said, but it is technically turkey dinner because it's Thanksgiving.
Well, maybe she cooks chicken on Thanksgiving.
Perhaps.
My big question is, what do the losers get? Nothing?
Nothing.
The losers go hungry.
But yeah, but this turkey looked less appetizing than one of those, you know, pre-cooked turkeys or chickens that you see at the grocery store that's just in the plastic container.
Yeah.
And it's like all of the winners on this 2-hour Impact Live are going to get to share in this turkey.
Winner, winner, chicken dinner. So how's the show?
Pretty bad.
Pretty bad, man.
Again, I was only a half hour in, so we got a really long Dixie promo where she introduced Rockstar Spud as her new assistant. And then EC3 had a bad match.
I thought her assistant was just some random girl. It's Rockstar Spud?
Rockstar Spud is in a suit with a bow tie.
This poor guy.
He's making Brad Maddox look good. And then we had EC3 fought Curry Man. They flew him in from Japan, and the dude doesn't even get to eat. Because
well, he's made of curry. What's the problem?
I guess he doesn't want to eat turkey anyway, so... And then we had a really bad backstage skit with Bromans and Eric Young saying that he's now in charge of the turkey challenge thing, the turkey suit. And it's tag teams. Tag teams are going to squabble for twice the gobble. He's got two turkey suits. So it's a tag team match to see who has to wear turkey suits this year.
There's certain no one's tuning out.
Then the promo got really, really dumb and went on forever, and I just wanted to turn the show off. And I was like, God, Brian, please call.
Wow. Well, I called exactly on time.
And then the one last thing, because I was just in the middle of the Lady Tapa Velvet match. And I generally get a kick out of Taz doing his commentary. And he pointed out that Velvet Sky is actually a very credible girl, which I'm assuming means that she's believable as a female.
She's a very credible girl.
Yes.
Well, I have to say, in terms of girls, she's quite credible.
She is quite credible. And you know, if he had said a credible wrestler, then it would have been less so. But as a credible girl, she definitely is.
Speaking of girls, Lance, you didn't happen to see, actually, I guess you would have on Raw, the multi-women elimination match on Survivor Series and Raw, the rematch that was on Raw.
I saw the one on Raw.
Yeah, you saw this. What did you make of this debacle?
To be perfectly honest, it's like, again, the finish was just atrociously stupid. And it was just a rushed sprint. But to be perfectly honest, I thought the girls did really well in managing to pull off, you know, 9 finishes in 4 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it wasn't a disaster because of them. It was just atrociously dumb to expect these girls to pull off. I don't know how many finishes they did. I think it was like 3 survivors, so there would have been... 9 finishes in 7 minutes, which is just ridiculous. But
actually, 11. I think there were 14 girls.
Okay, could have been, but there was an absurd amount of finishes, and really, apart from the who was it, the redhead girl, Eva Marie, that was sort of almost fell off of Alicia Fox or whoever it was that she was pinning. It's like none of the finishes really got botched, and when you're trying to do that many in that amount of time, it was actually almost impressive that it wasn't worse.
These women, some of the women are all right. Some are actually pretty decent. And if you...
Some of them have really improved.
Yeah. Brie Bella's really improved. Nikki's getting a little better. If you watch NXT, Paige obviously can work. And when Emma's not dancing, she can work. And who else is down there that can
actually,
work?
Summer's not
Summer Rae, yeah, she's pretty good.
Sasha's pretty good.
Sasha, yeah. But it seems that there are some girls that just, maybe it's just because there are less girls, they stick out more. But some of these girls, like, I guess she hasn't been in it long, but Eva Marie is completely beyond clueless and no hope whatsoever for Oksana by this point. I mean, some of these girls just don't get it. And I guess the question is, since there was And you've been down in developmental, you might know. Eva, there was one match, her first match, I believe, where she sold and sold and sold and then tagged out and immediately just jumped up on the apron and stopped selling. And then at Survivor Series, which you didn't see, she was eliminated and then happily went to the back slapping hands with fans. And it just seems like, I don't know, that's not how I would teach these people to perform.
No, although again, in her defense, it's more a case of she's just way too green to be on TV. You know what I mean? There's a million indie workers out there that have been working for years that if you watch them in a tag match, they tag out and stand up. It's not that uncommon. So I wouldn't be too harsh on her. I would put that in the same boat as when everyone jumped on poor Jackie Gata for the invisible bulldog. And it's like, no, it's the fault of people that put people who aren't ready on live television. But I do know that, and again, I don't know about when you lose or being eliminated and so forth, but I know, because I've actually, I don't know if argued is the right word, but debated the merits at the very least of they encourage people to, like as soon as you win a match, regardless of how devastating and beat up and back and forth a match may have been, they want you to get up and do your character, you know, and get your character over. And it's like, well, shouldn't you sell the importance of the match and the struggle that you were in, but seems to be more of an emphasis on, you know, you need to get up, you need to play your character. And I find that even watching Raw, you know, you'll watch, you know, Alberto Del Rio as an example, who will have this back and forth match where they trade three or four near falls or four or five near falls. And as soon as he gets the tap out, he just pops to his feet, runs to the corner, starts waving the flags and, you know, getting his beauty shot in. And it's like, you know, minutes ago, you were kicking out on 2 7/8 and were beat up, you know, and this is a guy that's been working in the business for I don't know how long. So it's certainly not exclusive to Eva Marie. It seems to be the trend of the industry now that, well, this, you know, this match stuff's over, so let's get on with the personality and characters.
Well, hold on a second. Let's say that I'm playing John F. Kennedy in a movie. My character is Kennedy, and it gets to the point where I get shot. My character would, my character was shot, right?
Yes.
So my character, after getting shot, wouldn't just start doing a speech. So
no,
so but, you're playing your character, but can't you play your character while you're selling a beating?
Well, again,
what does that mean?
As we've mentioned before, I think, it's the issue that, for the most part, they're one-dimensional characters. So if your character is that you sing, no matter how much you were beat up, you have to stand up and sing your song. And if your character is that you dance, again, Emma, for example, you know, she's got her wacky dance. So if she was having a long, drawn-out battle with Paige that she picks up the win, well, as soon as that bell rings, she's expected to stand up and do her dance to her bubbly song because that's her gimmick. Rather than, you know, perhaps someone who likes to dance that just got beat up really bad wouldn't necessarily be in the mood to dance. I actually got in trouble for this, and again, so it's not new. I got in trouble for this when I had the dancing gimmick. There was that match on Raw. It was really sort of it was a big turning point where I was sort of like officially a babyface, where there was the, what the hell is it called? The Jericho's interview, highlight reel, where Jericho brought us all out to say how awful, you know, the sheriff, Steve Austin, was. And he's, you know, he's done this to this guy and done this to this guy and, you know, making Lance dance and calling him boring. And I stood up for Steve and they jumped me and beat me up. And Rob Van Dam came up, made the save. And Steve made the tag match of Rob and I against Christian and Jericho. And, you know, we had this long, drawn out battle and stuff. And I ended up pinning Chris Jericho, which was a big deal for me as a babyface, as my sort of a first official match as a true blue babyface, and Jericho was certainly a further up the card guy than I was, and I beat him. And, you know, I sold after the, you know, I got the win, got my hand raised, but still sort of sold the impact of the match. And I got chewed out when I got to the curtain with, why weren't you doing your dance moves? And I'm like, this was like a 3-segment match. I got the shit kicked out of me. I didn't feel I should just pop up and dance and disrespect Jericho and Christian for the, boy, that was easy, now I can party. I'm like, well, you got to do your gimmick, And I got yelled at for selling.
Emma's dancing. Who came up with this idea? Did she do this sort of dancing when she was in the training school? Because from watching the reality show, this did not seem like a character that she would portray.
I don't know whose idea it was, but again, originally, and I think thankfully to her credit, she's managed to morph it a little bit. It originally wasn't a dancing gimmick as much as it was she was supposed to be an awkward, clumsy buffoon, basically, where she spilled stuff, and it's like she's trying to dance, but she's too uncoordinated and awkward to dance. And if you remember originally, I don't know if you were watching it then, where she'd try to skin the cat into the ring, and she'd get stuck upside down. And she was really just a stumbling, bumbling, awkward, clumsy goof is what the gimmick they gave her. But the wacky dance kind of got over. So she, again, she pretty much hits the skin the cat struggling so much. And the crowd's gotten into it. So it's become a she loves her bubbles and she finds this dance fun and they kind of enjoy it as a wacky dance. And she's not doing as much of the bumbling idiot where she walks into the room and knocks over the, you know, the easel in the background, or she'd bump into Renee Young. Originally, she was, you know, a clumsy oaf, and she's managed to at least morph it into a fun dancing gimmick, which has gotten over as a babyface.
So, Raw Monday, any other thoughts on that show before we move on?
Not really. I couldn't believe the opening promo to set up the TLC. To me, it just screamed out, this isn't going to be a unification match. They just want you to think it is, and each guy's going to grab a belt. And if that isn't going to be the case, and they actually are, after 11 years unifying these titles, I can't believe the extent of the build was John Cena going, you know what, we should only have one champ, and have Hunter and Steph go, you know, we were thinking about that, so sure.
Well, Hunter claims that's the idea.
Well, I still don't believe there's going to be one person winning. I know you mentioned that Hunter did a, I don't know if it's the website or app thing where he said that the idea is a unification, we need one champion. But until they announce that the stipulation of this match is that there can only be one winner, one guy will have to walk out with both titles, I won't believe it. I think they're just trying to now say the word unification because too many people noticed on Monday that they didn't say unification and they're expecting a screw job. So now they have to try to convince you enough that it's not going to be a screw job. And again, if they want you to believe it's not a screw job because it actually isn't going to be, then they need to come out and actually say there can only be one winner.
Is everybody ready for a nitpick?
Sure.
All right. So there's two belts. There's a world title and there's a WWE title. And according to Triple H, on the main event show and on WWE.com, the idea of this match is we don't need two champions anymore. There's no more brand extension. Only one champion is needed. So these belts are both on the line. We're going to have one champion after the TLC match.
We're still going to have three.
But my point is, if I'm Triple H and that's my idea, then I have a unified title belt created, and it's the only belt that I hang above the goddamn ring. Right?
Yes.
If I only want one champion, if I don't want a disputed finish, or I don't want them to just switch the titles or both just grab their own belt, then why would I hang both belts? Why not just create one belt, and that's the one they have to get? Then we are guaranteed there will only be one champion.
Well, except for the IC in the U.S.
That don't count. But one world champion.
But if the brand split is dead, why do we have a SmackDown GM and a Raw GM?
Well, they're just a GM of a particular show.
Although the SmackDown GM is all over Raw making matches all the time.
Well, you know, sometimes something comes up, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Lance, you can't think when you watch wrestling, don't you understand?
Don't ask questions.
Yeah, don't ask questions. Don't ask questions, just watch it and smile, you know?
Mm-hmm. And poor Daniel Bryan, who's been kidnapped and found in a park, maybe.
Maybe. They can't even get their own storyline straight.
Mm-hmm. Although I do have to agree with Vinny, although I wasn't as irate as he was. The concussion angle and the lack of treatment of it just seems in extremely bad taste.
How the hell did you let that guy back in the ring?
Yeah. And it's... I don't know what the answer is because you can't not do it, but when they do so many concussion angles, you know, there was one where Hunter suffered from the concussion and kept fighting, and Big Show's got the concussion, and Ziggler had a concussion and did an angle. They've done three or four concussion angles this year. And every single person in the company does at least two or three head kicks per match. You know, if we're going to draw attention to the fact that hitting someone in the head can cause a concussion that, you know, messes with their brain and causes brain damage, and we need to stop these people from wrestling, then if you're going to draw that much attention to strikes to the head are this dangerous, we probably shouldn't have guys taking four and five head kicks every match. Now, again, I'm not saying we should stop doing super kicks and enziguris and thrust kicks and mafia kicks and all of the other, you know, kicks that we do to the head. But if we are going to kick people in the back and side in front of the head three or four times a match, we probably shouldn't do concussion angles.
You know, there's a myth that some people subscribe to, not everybody, but I hear it every now and then. That, you know, we just didn't know the danger of concussions until just recently. We didn't know the danger of chair shots to the head until, you know, just a few years ago when Chris Nowinski came along. And I brought up a million times, when I was wrestling and Tim was doing hardcore matches, and this is the late 90s, I never let anyone come near my head with a chair or anything. You know, I knew, you don't get, getting hit in the head is bad. I mean, this was not a mystery, but we had Thanksgiving here in America, Lance. I don't know if you're aware, but Whitney's grandfather, somebody was over, and he's like 85 years old. And we kind of just got to talking, and he's like, yeah, I watched a lot of boxing in the 50s, and I remember that I once was in a boxing class, and I got knocked on my ass, and I decided I should never be a boxer again. And he's explaining to me that he knew that some guys could get hit in the head and they were all right, and other guys could get hit in the head and they would suffer a concussion, and you didn't want to suffer a concussion, and certainly not a number of concussions, because it could screw you up for life or perhaps put you in danger of death. And this was stuff that he knew in the 50s.
Well, yeah, I think, again, yeah, A, everyone's trying to, you know, hedge their bets or minimize their guilt or what have you, but I don't think people realized to the full extent.
Really?
Again, you know, well, I don't think, well, again, even just, you know, just recently, even the Chris Nowinski crew has sort of reclassed what they consider a concussion. You can get a concussion without actually getting knocked out.
Sure.
And, you know, pretty much now where it's like, even if you just see stars or a flash for a second, it's like, okay, you've got a concussion. And, you know, so I don't know if people thought there were, you know, with the NFL videos and stuff that I've seen with Chris Nowinski, where they're, you know, the guys that can't name the months of the year, you know, I don't think a lot of people thought that, you know, the damage was necessarily going to be that much. But yeah, you know again, boxers being punchy was a common thing talked about and not taken as seriously as it should have, but he's punch drunk because he got punched in the head too many times. I like to joke when people, because people still get on me about my Rob Van Dam chair shots from Barely Legal. I just say, you know, I was a decade ahead of my
time. You were ahead of your time. It's true.
You
knew better than to hit that guy as hard as you could in the head with a chair, right?
I just wasn't comfortable smacking someone really hard with a steel thing in the head and thought we were supposed to work these stupid things.
Yeah.
And again, when Balls killed me with that first one, I just went to Paul and said, if I need to get hit by a chair like that again, I quit.
How hard did he hit you?
Really fucking hard.
Like, what do you remember about it? I mean, was it...
I remember there was two, because we were supposed to feed up. Candido and I were supposed to feed up and take a chair shot into the head from Axel and Balls, I believe. And I think Candido knew more about the Balls chair shot than I did, so he lined it up in front of Axel. And I believe I put my hand up, because I usually did, and felt like I broke my wrist taking the chair shot on my hand and got hit in the head pretty good, too. And then when I bent over to take the one in the back on my hands and knees, he didn't hit me, you know, up on the upper part of my back. He managed to hit me low enough that the side arms of the chair caught the top of my pelvic bone. And that hurt like a son of a bitch, too. And at that point in time, I'm like, this isn't what I do for a living. I'm not going to sacrifice my health so someone else can get over, hit me with a chair. And I was still working in Japan at the time. And when Japan is the light and easygoing style compared to what you're doing when you're not in Japan, I'm like, well, screw that. And I don't think I ever took a balls money chair shot again.
I do have to say, in defense of Tim, I did once have a match with him and he swung a chair at my head and I extended my arm like, you know, completely straight and you know, it didn't come within about, you know, 4 feet of my head. Because I got a 4 foot arm. But anyway, I took a bump and he just looked down at me and he just shook his head and he goes, "Oh, Chico." And I knew this fucker ain't gonna stop until he hits me in the head with his chair. So I got up and I got ready to take another one. And I was just like, God damn it. I'll take one. I'm not gonna put my hand up. And he hit me with that chair and it was a loud noise and the place popped. But I remember it was like, that was a really easy chair shot. Like he knew how to swing a chair. I mean, I don't want to say that there's a way to fake a chair shot because, you know, I did get hit in the head with a chair. But he swung that chair in such a way that, I mean, I didn't see stars. It didn't hurt. He hit me just enough to make a sound, and I took my bump, and I was like, huh, how about that? But well, the number of guys able to do that is small.
And it's really sad. And now, granted, we don't hit each other, but I teach people here how to properly do one and take one so you don't. Because, again, in ECW, Jerry Lynn and I on several occasions would, you know, we'd have a chair shot as a finish to the head, but we each put one hand up, bumped away at the right time, and we'd do the hand, you know, only an inch from our head, not the 4 feet like you.
Better safe than sorry.
Well, yeah, although when you're working 25 people in Tulalip, it's like, yeah, by all means have your hands a mile and a half away.
With a glove on.
But you know, we would swing it properly. We'd have the hand up and be bumping when we got there, and it's like we didn't actually have skull to chair contact. And they were, again, they weren't, you know, the Rob Van Dam ones, but it's like the crowd accepted them, they popped for them, and it's just a shame that, because I say it's like, oh, they have to ban chair shots to the head. It's like, well, you know, if people just worked stuff again, it wouldn't be a problem. But unfortunately, people won't. And I remember it was a long time ago. I actually wrote a commentary on my website. About the evolution of the chair shot, because it was FMW in Japan that created this problem, because the chairs in Japan have the, you know, the wood seats that are upholstered with vinyl, and that's riveted to the frame. So if you hit it really hard on the top of the guy's head, the seat pops off, and it looks really cool because then the metal frame hangs around his head. And that started getting over in Japan, and you can't put your hands up or the seat won't break. So they started having guys have to keep their hands down so they could pop the seat out by hitting them really hard. And it was the, you know, the Sabus and stuff and the guys that were starting to work with FMW that came back with, oh man, you know, you're being a pussy, you're putting your hands up. We don't put our hands up in Japan. And it's like, yeah, but these seats don't pop off. So you're just getting hit really hard with steel. And it was like, that was sort of where all this unprotected chair shot bullshit came from. Because I used to argue with all the guys in ECW. They're like, oh, man, it looks fake when you put your hands up. I'm like, no, it looks fake when I stand there with my hands in my pocket when you run across the ring and smack me in the face with a chair. Because if you legitimately grabbed a chair and swung it at my head, I put my hands up. And it's the trick to making it look good is, again, with the hand being close to your head, it's the, oh, shit, I'm trying to cover up, but I still get hit anyway. But when you're just standing there looking at the guy with your hands at your side and the guy waffles you in the head, I'm like, well, this looks fake to me.
Guy's going to block a chair shot with his hands or his forearm. I don't have a problem with that. Swinging his head all you want. But it's got to be blocked. And I got to say, too, as far as like the idea of, you know, it's fake if you put your hands up. I remember it was Ric Flair that used to always do this, and I always thought this was so awesome. He'd be brawling outside the ring. And this is in WWE because they had the metal ring steps. I guess they had these in WCW as well. But somebody would take him around the ring, and they'd go and they'd ram his head into the ring steps. And obviously, you know, if the camera's behind you or whatever, it's all fine and good. But sometimes he would be thrown into the steps, and like the camera's right there, and it's close enough that it's just going to catch everything. And he puts his hands down so he doesn't really hit his head. And what he would do is, the guy, when he slammed and Flair blocked, Flair would come up and he would start selling his fingers. Like, oh, I was thrown into these steps. I tried to block, but God damn, that hurt my fingers. And I thought, this guy is the man. You know what I mean? Like, he wasn't stupid enough to hit his real head on the real metal. He was going to block it, but the camera was right there, and the dude's such a pro. He knows everyone can see it really hit his head, so what does he do? He sells his fingers. Great! You know, little things like that. Hey, you know, someone swings a chair, and you get your hands up, and it's obvious. Doesn't mean you got to take another one right. It means you start selling your damn wrist or something like that. Like, God, I tried to block that, and now I broke my wrist. There's a million things you can do.
Well, that often comes up with, you know, charging the guy in the corner, he puts his foot up and kicks you in the face.
Sure.
A lot of times in camp matches and stuff, the guy, you know, because they're not very good at it and they're afraid, you know, they'll end up, you know, hitting the guy in the shoulder, in the arm. And it's like they'll go down or they'll go, oh, that looked like crap. And I'm like, just sell your arm.
Yeah, sell something else. Sell what got hit.
Whatever got kicked.
Yeah.
Like if the guy gives you an enziguri and hoops you right in the back, just sell your back.
I remember what happened. I was watching, I think it was like Summer Rae. I can't remember the spot, but it was something weird. Like she took an X Factor. She took some sort of bump where she landed face first. And she turned over and she like grabbed the back of her neck or something. Like it was something wacky like that, where she was so used to selling in a certain way that when she bumped in a different way, she just started selling what she didn't hit. I just thought that was kind of like, cause see that all the time when people are first learning how to sell. I don't think they understand what they're even doing. It's like, you know, I don't think this needs to be explained, but
into unnatural positions.
Yeah, you should fake that you're hurt in whatever way you were attacked. So if someone punches you in the nose, you sell that differently than if they wring your arm. And some people have a certain way of selling where it's like no matter what you do to them, they'll grab their face. You know, you punch them in the stomach, they grab their face. You punch them in the ear, they grab their face. You stomp on their foot, they grab their face.
Actually, Jericho and I used to make fun of Bulldog Bob Brown. He booked for the few of the, you know, Winnipeg and in Calgary when we first broke in. And Bob was an old veteran and stuff. But he would always grab his ear. He'd pull the one arm up beside his head and he'd grab the other one. No matter what you did, you kick him in the stomach, you stomp on his foot. It was just, that was his I'm in pain expression. And he'd grab his one ear and have his arm up beside the side of his head. And we're like, this is ridiculous. I'm going to punch him in the belly. Watch him sell his ear.
Speaking of punching in the belly, one of my favorite spots. I'd never seen anybody do this. I don't even know why, because it's so awesome. Buddy used to do this.
How could it be your favorite spot if you've never seen it done?
Because every time I had a match with Buddy, he did this, and it was never not awesome. You take the guy into the corner, and he covers up, right? Because you should, because someone's about to punch you in the face when you're in the corner. So he covers up his face, and so he wants you to punch him in the belly. So you punch him in the belly, and he grabs his belly, but then he sticks his face out. So then you punch him in the face, and he rears his head back and grabs his face, but now his belly's sticking out, and so you punch him in the belly. And you just go back and forth, and I always thought that spot was just so awesome. And I've never seen anybody else do that.
I've never done it numerous times, but I've done that spot a million times.
I love that spot.
I actually did it in Iqaluit with Tyson Dukes.
Really?
Again, not repeatedly, but into my comeback. Ended up leading into the, you know, jab, 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 and then the big wind-up haymaker, and he puts both forearms up over his face and covers up. And then I sort of look at the crowd for a quick second, the big boot in the belly, and he drops his hand.
Yep.
And goes, oh, sticks his face out, and then you do the big wind-up haymaker and punch him in the face.
That's why I love pro wrestling.
It always works.
I love that spot. I don't know why. Sometimes I fear that, like, some of these old-time great spots, that's why I love the fact that there's YouTube. You know, you'll always be able to go back in 50 years and watch an old match from like the 70s or 80s and guaranteed, like, you know, somebody's going to find some spot that nobody does anymore and they're going to bring it back and it's going to get over huge.
Oh, Matt Capitelli and Joey Mercury used to do it. They did it in every match when it was the, again, Thrill Seekers version 2.0 against Eminem. And they'd do the chops in the corner. You know, Joey had light him up with a few chops and Matt would fire up, spin him around and tag him with a couple really good ones. You know, and then he'd, you know, look at the crowd, whether he'd lick his hand or, you know, warm up the chop and wind up for the big one. And Joey would turn his back and turtle with the, no, please don't chop me again. And then Matt would give him the really big, heavy back chop. And it's like, it always got such a great reaction.
The back chop.
You just chop him to the back?
Yeah.
basically just flat palm right in the middle of the back, and it just stings like a son
of
a gun.
You chop, they turn in the, yeah. That's, God, there's so many, I remember,
when was the last time you saw the water pump spot?
Oh God, it's been a long time. Those were the spots, those were the goofy ones that we used to do just like at Buddy's school, like just to goof around. You try and do like the rowboat and stuff like that, but just no one does it anymore. I think they figure it's too phony. And meanwhile, I watch matches and I just don't care because they're just by the numbers.
Yeah, I think you might be to the point where, you know, the water pump and the rowboat may not work anymore, but there's a lot of other stuff that still can for sure.
Now, how is camp going, by the way?
Tomorrow's evaluations.
Uh-oh. Is it going to be just like the TV show?
No, they're missing more than one thing.
Oh, Lance, I hope they're not listening now.
Although, again, I don't care who you are unless you've got years of experience and probably decades of experience. You're missing things. I'm missing things, so let's be honest. But it's always good because we're going out to dinner afterwards. So it's like I'll spend the morning telling them they're all the shits, and then they'll go out and take me to dinner.
Wow. What a life.
Yeah, I'm not going to be that mean, of course. But I always joke that, well, evaluations tomorrow, I get to tell you all why and how you suck so bad.
What have you learned this year about pro wrestling?
I don't know. Again, I don't know if I've learned it, but it's been reaffirmed that the basics and the old stuff still works.
Sure.
I think the Tyson Dukes match was a prime example. It's like, you know, there was guys out there doing 10,000 spots, and we went out there and did, you know, what I would call just working old school wrestling, and it's like the crowd really enjoyed it.
Do you feel, I guess, I don't even know what the word would be, content, happy with the fact that the WWE developmental system now is, it's kind of, they want people to know how to work a match. Does that sound kind of like weird?
It is, but I don't 100% agree with what they consider a match to be.
But it seems more like what you would teach them when they headed out there than if, for example, like 5-6 years ago.
I don't know. If you go 8 years ago, I was there and I was teaching them how to work better, in my opinion. But
really,
I do like the developmental system, and they do have got a lot of good things. But I still think they micromanage too much. And they don't let people find themselves. They want everybody to have, okay, this is your comeback. And it's like, okay, well, this is going to be your hold. And it's like, you're making it too rigid.
Do you feel that the trainers are concerned that if they don't micromanage, then the idea will be that they're not doing their job?
Well, I think, again, to a certain extent, it's like, you know, they've got a bit of a mandate on what they want them to teach. You know, I know when it was the first time I went down and I was doing the beginner class with Steamboat, and, you know, he had his, you know, we want to work on our holds and make, and part of it I really like, because it's like, you know, I want guys to work holds and not just, okay, I'm putting a chin lock on because we're in a rest hold. But, you know, they had the list of the holds they were teaching the guys this month, and I'm looking at this list and it's like, 3/4 of these, no one's ever going to use. I mean, they had the octopus hold on it. I'm like, who the hell's going to use that? I even said to this team, I said, you try to put an octopus hold on in North America, and they think you screwed up an abdominal stretch.
Did you watch Total Divas, by the way?
I've never watched more than 20 minutes of the first episode.
Man, they had a great moment.
Showing leg submissions?
Yeah, they're at the Performance Center, and the whole show is just wacky because Natalia, they just made her come off like just a complete crazy woman.
She is a Neidhart.
Well, that is true. But Eva wants to learn how to work, and so she goes to Tyson Kidd, a veteran who happens to be there at the Performance Training Center, and she asks him to help her be a better wrestler. And so the first thing he starts doing is showing her like a reverse inverted figure four. Like, what? And he actually had an explanation for it, which was that Eva thinks Natalia is a great wrestler, and she hopes to feud with her someday. So in Tyson's mind, he was coming up with something that could cross up Natalia's sharpshooter finish, and this was the move he came up with, and so he was teaching it to her. And I was like, well, at least he had an explanation for how he was teaching her such a preposterous move. But it was hilarious to watch.
But it's the problem of, again, reality TV being complete bullshit. It's like, they don't want to exposed too much. So it's like, you don't want him to take her in there and go, okay, you know, you've got to sell better. This is the way you need to sell. You know, I mean, if he really wants to teach her to work, he's going to have to do a big expose on the business.
Sure.
You know what I mean? So it's like, well, if we just show you interesting holds, then we're not exposing the business, but then it ends up being just preposterous fake television. Because again, you know, what does Eva Marie really need to learn how to do? She needs to learn how to sell and move and position herself more than she does anything else, and then other than doing a big expose, okay, this is fake, this is how you need to react to stuff, you can't really teach them. So you're sort of stuck when it comes to, well, we want to show some training. So you're in that boat.
And he did. He did afterwards threaten to shoot on Fandango.
Ah.
But you know what, Lance? You do have to watch next week because you're gonna be get a chance to meet on television Arion's boyfriend, Vincent, and they take him to the Performance Training Center, and you can watch how they train a man from scratch.
Mm.
Yeah.
I would imagine they will do just a lot of cardio and conditioning stuff where Bill yells at him and he...
That's exactly what they do.
Yeah, I would imagine so. But again, what else do you do? You know what I mean? You want to make the industry look like it's tough and it's hard, so you want this guy to make it look like he's struggling. You don't want to get in there and go, okay, you know, this is how we tie up. Oh, lighten up, dude. You know, we don't want to be too stiff with that. And, you know, this is how you sell this. You don't want to put that on a show.
You know, I there's part of me when you're trying to break someone into wrestling, there's a part of me that thinks you should make them do something so that you can determine whether or not, maybe not even whether or not they're an athlete, but their level of athletic ability. And to me, You should give them drills that they can accomplish so that you can properly evaluate them. It should not be about, what is your cardio like right now? How long can you go before you vomit? Because if I took 99% of the guys on the WWE roster, maybe 95%, the vast majority of the WWE roster, yeah, I could run them and I could probably make them vomit within about 10 minutes. But what the hell does that have to do with anything? They're all WWE superstars on television, you know? But I think it is important if they're taking this Vincent guy, let's just say for real, he wanted to be a wrestler. I would like to get him in there and have him, I don't know, you know, do some rolls, maybe, you know, just try to do a shoot grappling match with somebody, you know, not like a fight or anything like that, but let's just see how you move on the mat. Let's see, even if you don't know how, let's just see how you move. I think that's important. But the idea that you run them until they die just to see if they're tough, I think that's stupid.
Well, again, I partially agree with you. I think there is something to, and it's character and determination, because there's a lot of guys that are pretty good athletes, but it's like, they don't really want to work all that hard. And so I think there is something. And when they do the, you know, the mass tryouts and stuff where they bring a bunch of guys down, I think it's important to, again, not necessarily push them till they vomit, but push them till they're so gassed where you can tell it's like, you know what I mean? You'll see the guys that push through and won't stop, and you'll see the guys that, you know, okay, I'm starting to get tired, so I'm looking for the excuse to go sit down. And you can weed out a lot of slackers, for lack of a different term. So, you know, if you're, okay, here's this Vinny guy, it's like, does he just want to be a superstar on TV, or does he actually have some get up and go, and he's going to be a good athlete? So, yes, put him in some roles and make him do stuff, see what kind of athlete he is, and let him grapple and roll a little bit, sure. But I think there is something to, you know, let's get this guy in. And again, whether it be 1,000 squats or 1,000 burpees or, you know, running and doing shuttle runs and make him vomit. Get to that point where it's like, okay, this is the exhaustion where most people are going to want to quit. Does he still get up and do one more lap? And if he does, then it's like, okay, we know we got somebody here that's willing to work hard and push beyond just the limits of, you know, okay, this is fun. So I do believe in that, especially when you're scouting on whether you're going to employ somebody or not. So I think there is something that, but you can't just do that.
Well, I mean, some of the drills, I mean, when you talk about how French Stallion blew out his knee, It's like, I still can't envision in my head what the point of this drill was or why you would do it except to test if a guy's ACL is going to hold up, which to me sounds like a stupid drill.
Yeah, that one in particular, again, unless I'm misunderstanding it, that's what I was, it was explained to me what he was doing, and it does seem odd. But again, you know, making a guy, you know, when I played basketball in high school, you know, we have to do, we call it the shuttle run or the suicide run where, you know, you start at one end of the court and it's like, you know, to the key and back,
sure, yeah,
and half court and back, and then the far key and back, and then the full length and back, you know, and they'd have us do these things for, you know, what seemed like hours on end. But, you know, you could tell which guys started jogging because they were tired and the guys that still sprinted as fast as they could and go. And it's like, you know, these are the guys that when you get into the deep water and really have to go are still going to go. And I think there is something to weeding those people out.
Let's plug the school.
Alrighty then. Storm Wrestling Academy. You can go to stormwrestling.com or stormwrestlingacademy.com. Both will take you to the same place. There's a banner there for my regular site that has commentaries and so forth that I will get updated more frequently, especially because session is over tomorrow and I get a month off. And then the page to the school. I run 3 sessions a year, January, May, and September. I'm the guy in the ring training with you each and every day. So it's hands-on and you get all of my knowledge. Again, you can email from the site there and find information, and you can contact me 12 weeks each. You can follow me on Twitter at Lance Storm. That gets you all the most up-to-date information. I've got a Facebook page, but I don't update it nearly enough. But the Twitter will get you on everything. Just a couple other plugs. December 15th, an afternoon show for Smash Wrestling in Mississauga. If you go to Smash Wrestling, Google Smash Wrestling, I don't know what their actual website is. I will be wrestling Chris Hero.
That's right.
Dog on the 15th. And then on the 21st of December, I am returning to Hanover, Germany, where I wrestled for Otto Vons back in 93 and 95, to tangle with my old rival, Dirty Dan Collins, in what I'm told is his retirement match. He asked me if I'd be willing to do his last match with him, and I'm going back there on the 21st to wrestle him. I don't remember the name of the company that it's for, but I've been tweeting information out about it and so forth. So if you're in Hanover, Germany, look for December 21st, or again, anywhere in Europe and want to make the trip. I think I might be doing a seminar on the 20th before that, if you're interested in that. But the match for sure on the 21st of December in Hanover. Who knows if I will ever return and wrestle in Europe again after this? I don't know.
Never say never, Lance.
Well, I've never said never, which is because I know that there's always possibilities. But it's been a long time, and I'm heading back to Germany for a match, so it should be a lot of fun.
I remember the other day I was teaching the kids' class, and we were trying to tell them about how you got to be aware of your surroundings and never turn your back on an opponent. Which, by the way, they should teach people in pro wrestling as well. I think they used to. And we're talking about how, you know, never, it's just like you never run across the street without looking both ways. You know, you got to look both ways. Never just run. And one of the kids just all of a sudden goes, "You should never say never." And I was like, in this case, never run across the street without looking both ways. So sometimes, everybody, you do have to say never. Now, we're going to head out now. And in a couple of weeks, we'll be back. And Lance, I'm going to want to talk about Germany and Chris Hero and all these upcoming dates. And as he noted, you can head to the website stormwrestling.com. There is a splash page. You can go to his personal website or the Storm Wrestling Academy website, as well as Facebook and Twitter. If you want to learn to be a pro wrestler, a lot of guys that Lance has trained, and gals, in fact, are wrestling all over the world right now, including several of them in WWE developmental, and surely at some point, more to come. And you get to get in there in the ring, not only train with Lance as your instructor, but at the end of the session, you get to have a one-on-one in-ring battle with Lance Storm, after which he tears you apart, and then you go buy him dinner. So it's a fun thing, and people have been doing it for years, churning out great wrestlers, Mexico, Australia, here in the U.S., so check it out, everybody. And thank you, Lance, and speaking of thanks, everybody. It is Thanksgiving here in the U.S. Been a great day here. Hopefully you guys have had a great day as well, and we shall be back in a few hours with a Brian and Vinny show, so check it out.